Now, most guys think that testosterone is being drained by aging, bad genetics, or maybe even a lack of exercise. But what if I told you that's not the case? In fact, the real culprit is something you're likely eating every day. And here's the shocking part. It's something you've always been told is healthy. This one food has been scientifically shown to devastate testosterone levels, and most men have no idea. It's not junk food. It's not sugar. It's something way more unexpected. And just eating it a few times a week is enough to wreck your testosterone, drain your energy, and crush your motivation. But here's the good news. Cutting this one thing out of your diet could completely transform the way you feel. Our friends at V-Shred have seen it firsthand with their clients, and guys who stop eating it are building muscle, burning fat, and feeling more energized than they have in years. It's truly incredible how quickly things can change once you know what to avoid. And V-Shred, the team behind Cutting Edge Fitness and Nutrition Strategies, has created a video that reveals exactly what this testosterone-killing food is and why removing it from your diet could be the key to unlocking your body's true potential. So if you want to know what this food is, head over to sculptnation.com/X22. That's sculptnation.com/X22. Just watch the video or click the link below in the description. V-Shred's experts break it all down, and this one simple change could make all the difference. Trust me, this is one thing you don't want to miss. Hi, and welcome to the X22 Report Spotlight. Today we have a returning guest, Brandon Straka. Brandon is the founder of the Walk Away Campaign, a former liberal and former Democratic Party supporter who very publicly walked away from the political left and created a social movement encouraging others to do the same. You can find all his work at Walk Away Campaign. He has a new challenge that he's offering, $10,000 for the best Walk Away video. You can go to walkawaychallenge.com. And I am very happy and honored to have Brandon back on the X22 Report Spotlight. Brandon, welcome back to the Spotlight.
Great to be here.
Hey, thanks for being here. And you walked away from the Democratic Party about 6 years ago. You put up this incredible video. I watched it. It's very professionally done. And when you look back in time, everything that you thought back then, is it still true? Are the reasons still the same? The reasons why you walked away?
It's worse. It's much worse. When I walked away, when I put out my first video 6.5 years ago, when I started Walk Away, and that video was talking about the reasons why I was walking away, I was talking about things at that time, like how the left was beginning to sort of engage in this radical gender ideology, and that they were dividing people by race and pushing this narrative of white privilege and white supremacy, and that they were, you know, being dishonest. And I mean, it's almost in this way, like kid stuff, you know, compared to today. And that's, you know, I know that you recently saw that I put out a new video where I kind of like updated 6.5 years later where everything has landed. But to answer your question, like, do I maintain that the reasons why I walked away are still legitimate? Not only would I say 100%, I would say things are much, much, much worse than they were 6 years ago.
So when you say they're much worse, like, what are you looking at? What are you comparing?
Well, for starters, when, you know, I put out that first video 6.5 years ago, we hadn't yet had the BLM Antifa riots of 2020. We hadn't had the COVID shutdown. We hadn't had the 2020 election and everything that followed that. We hadn't had the January 6th witch hunts. We hadn't had the President Trump witch hunts with the 4 indictments and 90 felony charges. We hadn't had President Trump getting shot in the head. It just goes on and on and on. So, I mean, the ways in which things have gotten worse are that these same people who felt, you know, 6 years ago emboldened to divide us, deceive us, lie to us, use their levers of power to begin the process of controlling us and bringing authoritarian ideology to America. Well, we've now gone into overdrive at this point. I mean, they wreaked unspeakable violence against the American people throughout the entire year of 2020. And let's be honest, pretty much from the moment that President Trump got elected.
Yeah.
But, you know, in 2020, it was much, much, much worse. And then at the same time, simultaneously, they decided that they had the right to tell us that we can't leave our homes, that we can't open our businesses, we can't go to work, that we have to wear a mask. And if we don't wear a mask, will be criminalized for not doing that, that we have to take vaccines and medication that we don't want to take, and that we don't have the right to get on airplanes anymore or travel, and rounding people up and jailing people, violent FBI raids over ultimately misdemeanor trespassing charges for January 6th. I mean, this is really, truly very authoritarian, Stalinesque kind of stuff. And I know people hear terms like that and they think, okay, well, you know, it's extreme, but you're being a little bit hyperbolic. I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, I think that just because for someone out there who might be watching or listening, maybe this hasn't touched you yet, but it's coming and it's definitely touched me. And I can tell you that I don't see any difference whatsoever when I know, you know, the FBI raided my home, threw me in jail, and then the entirety of the Democrat Party, the DOJ, the FBI, and the left-wing media colluded together to try to destroy virtually every aspect of my life and essentially put me on what is really no different than a Chinese social credit score system in which, you know, I'm not allowed to, you know, be on social media or send or receive money or have bank accounts. So for those of us who have gone through things like that, it's not hyperbolic at all. And I think that this is what they're trying to normalize for all people, you know, because they want to keep people under their idea of control.
So when they threw you in prison and there, you just told me beforehand that they're still monitoring you. I don't think people realize this, even though you get off and you're free now, you know, to travel and things like that. They still monitor you, you know, what you're doing, where you're going and everything like that. Do you think they did all this to send a message to the American people?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And I think that that's also the reason why they did this to me, because, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, you know, I didn't even enter the Capitol on January 6th. And I didn't, you know, it's not as though I was, you know, breaking windows or fighting with police officers. I was on the east side of the building for 8 minutes standing outside of the building, filming a video. And when I got there, when I arrived at the Capitol, there were no longer any barricades at all. There were zero police officers on the east side of the building where I was, and the doors on the east side of the Capitol were open when I arrived. So I walked up to the Capitol and I filmed for 8 minutes these two open doors and a crowd of, you know, several hundred people who were trying to, some of them were trying to push their way in and some were just standing there filming like me. But you know, most people who are familiar with the details of my case cannot figure out what possible crime I could have committed or why they would have any interest in going after charges on a situation like that. Because, you know, when you think about it, their goal is to try to create this narrative of a insurrection or like a deadly, violent coup, you know, and certainly rounding somebody up and jailing them who didn't engage in any violence, who stood outside the building, does not help that narrative whatsoever. But what it does do is send shockwaves, chilling shockwaves, I think, across the landscape that makes people feel like, wow, you don't actually even have to do anything for them to treat you this way and put you on these lists and destroy your life. So maybe it's just better that we not even show up at all for a rally or for an event, or maybe we shouldn't send money to a political candidate because maybe then we'll be put on a list, or, you know, it goes on and on. But I think that's 100% why they did what they did to me. And I think that's their goal overall is to try to scare the hell out of people.
I mean, it's a little different because Nancy Pelosi is not handling the security of the Capitol. Now we have Johnson supposed to be handling the security of the Capitol. Do you think that we might see something very similar to what happened back in 2020?
No. I mean, certainly not from Trump supporters or Republicans. Now, if Donald Trump wins the election, do I think that the left will riot and destroy and burn and loot and beat people and, you know, everything? Yes. And just like they always have. And I also think that they will not be held accountable. They won't be charged. Nothing will happen. And do I think it'll happen at the Capitol? I don't know. I the left is pretty good at crafting their hypocrisy. Mm. So they're able to kind of say, oh, well, yeah, a lot of people looted and rioted and destroyed when Trump got elected, but they didn't do it at the Capitol. That's the Capitol is sacred, and that's why this is different. And so I don't know. I would imagine they would probably take steps to make sure that there wasn't another incident at the Capitol just for an optic standpoint, but they're not going to prevent people from, smashing windows and destroying communities. And they're going to say, well, people are going to do what people are going to do. They're outraged because America just reelected a white supremacist.
Right, yeah. So when you look at the entire movement, I mean, you started this, you started bringing people over from the left, and I think Trump just a couple of weeks ago saying we can't take this country back with only 50% of the country. And I think this is why your movement is so important, because we need people to see the truth. We need people to see what's really going on here. And since you've been doing this for, 6 years, have you seen more people come over to the Republican side, or maybe say, listen, I don't want to be part of the Democratic Party anymore? Do you see a shift right now, maybe more so than you did maybe 2 or 3, 4 years ago?
Oh yeah, it's massive. And I mean it's I would describe it as massive when I started it 6 years ago. But I think it's even more massive now, because it's not even just that we're getting so many stories and testimonials and seeing people speaking out on social media, but it's now, I mean, really high profile figures, and including Democrat Party politicians. I mean, we now have people like Tulsi Gabbard, RFK, Georgia State Rep Misha Maynor, Texas State Rep Sean Thury, Gloria Romero, former California State Senator. I mean, it seems like almost on a day, Alan Dershowitz, it seems like almost on a daily basis now, even very high profile people are speaking out and walking away. And by the way, no one really has to do that, right? I mean, people change their mind all the time, including they're probably even, I can't imagine what they're thinking, but I'm sure there are even Republicans who have walked away and maybe decided to become Democrats. And usually what people do is they'll make that decision and then, change their voter registration and move on. So I think the real question is, why are people feeling the need to speak out about this? Why are they making videos and posts? Why are they joining Walkaway? What, because this is more than just changing your mind about what the right decision is for you in terms of the party you support or the vote. Or this is about the recognition that one of America's two major political parties has been completely co-opted, and I would say infiltrated, by Marxists, if you want to call them communists, if you want to call them socialists, if you want to call them, but there is a radical agenda that has infiltrated one of America's two major political parties. And the way that they're conducting themselves and the way they're conducting business has become intolerable to so many people in this country, including so many people who formerly supported that party. And so I think that's a really important thing to point out, because, look, if you were just not fed up with what you feel like the Democrats are offering you or not offering you, you change your voter registration, you move on. But that's not what's happening. I mean, there's a movement of people who are standing up to this party and saying the values that you now represent are contrary to American liberty, American goodness, and exceptionalism. They're eroding and decaying America's values, and we will not stand for it. We will not allow it. And I think that that movement is bigger today than it was even 6 years ago when I launched Walkaway.
So is there a common theme that, and when you talk to people and people say, I had enough, is it the economy? Is it the border? Is it maybe something I'm not even mentioning? Is there a common theme why people say, you know what, I've had enough, like I can't do this anymore? Maybe they won't come over to the Republican Party. I mean, maybe they'll become independent. I mean, there's also different levels of the left, different levels of the right, because you have the far left, then you have the moderates. Same thing here. You have rhinos, you have the far right. So when you speak to people, is there a common theme where people are saying, you know what, this is the part where I hit the precipice and I said, enough is enough?
Yeah. So, as it pertains to specific issues, I would say that if you watch walkaway videos or read the testimonials, you'll find that the various issues are kind of fragmented almost equally. For some people, it's crime in their neighborhood, or, you know, how the demographics in their neighborhood have shifted in a way that has made people feel less safe, or their communities feel, you know, less clean, like a less safe place to live. Some people it's immigration and the border security. For a lot of people, of course, it's the economy and the affordability of groceries and gas and things like that. So the specific issues are, I think, almost equally broken up among different people and different demographics. But I will say the one common theme in almost every walkaway story, no matter what the root cause is, the common theme is a feeling of betrayal. That all of a sudden one day somebody woke up and realized, wait a minute, the party that I've been supporting, this ideology and this cause that I have given my time, my energy, my heart, my belief to, has changed. And that people feel really deceived, lied to, and again, betrayed. And for me, it's, you know, people ask me all the time, like, what was the one thing that pushed you over the edge? Well, you know, there are a number of specific anecdotes that, you know, I could tell. But what it really was more than anything was the realization that the media that I had been trusting my entire life had been deceiving me, betraying me, and lying to me about all of these different things that they made me believe about Donald Trump, about his supporters, about the Republican Party. And all of it was intentionally designed to keep me suspended in a state of fear so that they could control how I felt, so they could control how I think, so they could control how I vote. And when I made that realization and I internalized that betrayal, you know, I was mad as hell and decided I'm not going to take it anymore. And I'm going to speak out about this. And that's why I started walk away. But that's, if I had to say one thing more than anything, it's that every person who walks away ultimately experiences some moment of the realization of betrayal. And it becomes at that point intolerable for them.
So how did you figure out that the news was lying to you? I mean, I think we all went through it. I mean, even people who are Republicans, independents, I think there's a point in time where people say, you know what, I don't believe this anymore. What made you stop believing the news?
Well, so I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. Huh? And I literally was crying when Donald Trump got elected. I mean, I was really shattered. I was scared and I was angry. And I was I was very, very fearful because the media had been telling me for 18 months that Donald Trump was a racist, that his supporters were racist and bigots and homophobes, that they hated minorities and immigrants and LGBT people, that if Donald Trump got elected, it would mean that we were going to roll back civil rights for minorities. And I believed all of it. But I believed all of it, but I also wasn't like super worried about it because the same media kept telling me that she was going to win in a landslide and that he had like a 3% chance of winning. And so now all of a sudden he's won and they were completely wrong. And so now I'm like living in a state of terror. And my decision to start researching it was not based ever on any desire to like or be okay with Donald Trump or like or be okay with his supporters. I literally just wanted to pull myself out of this like depression and this state of fear that I was in. And I thought to myself, you know, this is going to be a really long and brutal 4 years if I don't find a way to come to terms with what has just happened. So my journey began with me just trying to understand why did anyone vote for Donald Trump and how did the media get it so wrong? And so I started asking a lot of questions and going back to the beginning of his campaign. And I mean, the real beginning of it, people have heard this story 45 million times. So I'll just make it really brief. But, you know, I kind of rage posted one day in January of 2017 about like, you know, I can't believe you guys could vote for a man who would mock a reporter's disability. Like, what's wrong with you guys? And that was when somebody sent me a video debunking that Trump mocked the disabled reporter. And that video showed really clearly that the media had taken that moment out of context, lied about it, created a false narrative. And I was like, wait a minute, what? And so I went back and I started kind of studying and researching all of these moments that had upset me, like him calling all Mexicans rapists, his comments, from the Access Hollywood tape about women, and them calling the Muslim ban, the Muslim ban. Is it really a Muslim ban? And the border wall, is the border wall racist? And, I went back and I started like looking at all these things. And what I found was that time and time and time again, in almost every circumstance, when the media had, served up on a platter this story that was emotionally manipulative, that they were being dishonest, that they were taking a moment and spinning it out of context and putting their own false narrative behind it with the intention of manipulating my emotions and deceiving me. And I started to see this pattern really clearly, like time and time and time and time again. And then when I realized, wait a minute, so you're telling me that when Trump got elected, I didn't need to spend 2 weeks freaking out, crying, depressed, scared to death, like none of this had to happen. I felt that way because you guys lied to me over and over and over again. And that's when I started to see that the left-wing media, total liars and deceivers. And then that's ultimately what led to me fighting back against them and speaking out.
There's a lot of people that, their families are divided. I mean, they have, some parts of the family's Republican, some parts are Democrats, some people aren't talking to each other. What is one way to get people to see the truth? Because a lot of times, I mean, even in my family, we have Democrats and it's very, very difficult to speak to them because they don't want to hear the truth. Actually, to this day, I still have one individual that still believes the Hunter Biden laptop is Russian disinformation. Will not even look at the proof, will not look at the documents, will not look at anything. This individual still believes that it's Russian disinformation. So what I find difficult, and I think many, many people who have, family members that are Democrats or they don't believe, maybe they are Republicans, but they don't like Trump. I don't know. Let's talk about protecting yourself on the road. According to a recent report, drivers equipped with dash cams are 60% less likely to be found at fault in traffic accidents. This saves countless amounts of time and money fighting legal battles following accidents. That's because dash cams provide clear, indisputable evidence of events leading up to and during a collision. This is why I'm driving more confidently with this magical little device and absolutely love the security and peace of mind it brings me. This product is an easy-to-install dash cam that helps record every detail on the road. It supports collision documentation, 24/7 security, and capturing memorable drives. It is loaded with state-of-the-art features that keep me safe while on the road, including 4K Ultra HD, night vision, 24/7 motion detection, loop recording, and easy installation. This is a must-have for anyone on the road. Use my link in the description below or visit carvisionx.com to get free express shipping plus several other bonuses with every order during their summer special completely for free. That is carvisionx.com or click the link in the description. The situation. How do you get through to them? How do you, I don't want to convince them. I want, like you, when you woke up, you started to think logically, you started to say, whoa, wait a minute, something's wrong here. I want them to start thinking. I want them to start saying, something doesn't make sense. So how do we do this? Because I think a lot of people have tried. I think a lot of people are trying to show them that, hey, look, it's not what you think it is. They're lying to you. How do we do this?
Well, the first thing I would say is like using your own anecdote that you were just talking about a moment ago, you have to understand, and I think most people know this sort of intuitively, there are some people who probably can't be helped, maybe ever. Or certainly you look at where they are right now and you're like, today is not the day, maybe, and probably this is not the year. When somebody absolutely refuses to look at evidence and refuses to have a conversation, I put those people in the category of like not worth my time right now. But there are a lot of people that are worth my time and your time and everybody's time. And, with Walkaway, I always say, if we can even get 5% to change their mind and move, first of all, that's enough to sway an election. But second of all, that begins, I think, the process of pulling more and more people into rational clear critical thinking and makes the pool on the other side smaller and smaller who are, you know, stuck in this deception. And what I tell people as far as strategies are, you know, I base a lot of it on my own experience. You know, that incident with the disabled reporter that I was just describing, a woman that's known me literally since I was a baby, because she was my babysitter when I was very little. And I, you know, I kept, we were friends on Facebook. She's always been a staunch Christian conservative, so we really didn't have much in common in terms of our politics and our ideals and things like that. But for whatever reason, you know, I just was friends with her on Facebook. But she reached out to me privately with a link to that video debunking that Trump mocked the disabled reporter. And she said to me, look, I'm not, you know, trying to start a fight with you. I'm just asking, have you seen this? And she sent me, you know, this link to this video. And she just said, will you watch it and let me know what you think? And I watched it, and I watched it three times in a row because I was having cognitive dissonance when I watched it, because I realized that I was wrong. I knew it immediately. When I watched it, I was like, oh my God, I was wrong. But, you know, when you realize you're wrong about something, sometimes you're like, you're trying to like find a detour where you can be like, yeah, but I'm kind of right. Or I might be kind of wrong, but it doesn't matter that I'm kind of wrong, because, you know, but like, I really couldn't find the path forward to accepting that. And so I ended up watching it three times, and then I couldn't process it. So I went to sleep, and then I woke up the next day and watched it a fourth time. And then I was finally able to begin the process of accepting that I was wrong. But what was so really kind of like magical and transformative about that was that, you know, she didn't make me feel cornered. She didn't make me feel like I had to, in the moment, admit that I was wrong. She didn't make me feel like I was stupid for believing something that wasn't true. She just sort of presented me with evidence. And she just said, you know, I know you're feeling really upset about this. Will you take a look at this and, you know, just tell me what you think? And that really did open up the door to, you know, some freedom for me to feel not accused, for me to feel like, you know, not defensive. And then ultimately, you know, through some conversations, I completely changed my mind. And then I began the process of changing my mind about everything. But I always recommend to people, you know, rather than being confrontational, and look, I'm a total hypocrite here, because I'm the first person to lose my temper when people are being obstinate and stubborn and, you know, and just parroting and repeating things that are not true. And you know where they got them from, because you're like, I know exactly where you got that stupid fake story from. And it's very hard to be patient sometimes. But I think that if you can make it a practice as often as possible to try to find compelling evidence of something and send that to somebody and just say, hey, I know I've heard you talk about this before, and I know how you feel about it. Will you take a look at this? And just, I'd love to know your thoughts and see, you know, how you feel about it after you see it. And I think just allow that space for conversation to open and to grow. I think that can be an effective strategy. And then the second, and I'll be very quick. The second thing is that, you know, I think it's always important for conservatives to establish what I call mutual core values, because Democrats, liberals believe that they have the monopoly on morality, which is kind of hysterical and ironic because they don't. But, you know, they believe that everything that they stand for is good, that they're against racism, they're against bigotry, and they're, you know, pro-equality and all these things. And then they end up supporting all these policies that are destructive and in many ways end up harming and damaging the communities that they claim that they care about. And so I always think, you know, if you can find a way to take the conservative policies that you care about, whether it's immigration, the border, the economy, whatever, and find a way to package what you believe in a way that demonstrates that you share the same core values as liberals do. You know, a strong economy helps the least of our own people. So if you look at low income immigrants or low income Black people, or, you know, if you care about women and their safety and women's rights, these are all the more reasons why we need strong, secure borders, that we should have a border wall, and that we need strong economic policies that help lift up women and people of color. And, you know, and conservative policies are actually to the betterment of these various communities that the liberals claim that they have ownership over. I mean, I think these are kind of some effective strategies at reaching people on the other side.
What do you think of the debate? How do you think that went?
Well, I'm in the very rare, minority that actually believes that Trump won the debate. I thought he did a great job. And I'm not just saying this. Like, look, I want to be clear. I've been very critical of the Trump campaign the last couple of years. There's so many ways in which I think they've made tons of mistakes and tons of missteps and so many missed opportunities, including the fact that I've been banging my head against the wall for 6.5 years trying to get them to work with Walkaway. I mean, we keep hearing that we need to win too big to rig. Mm. And then at the same time, it's not just my organization. I know a number of organizations who have felt like they've slammed the doors in our faces and said, we don't need you. Okay. Well, so I want to be clear and say, I am not a Trump cultist. I'm not one of these people who is incapable of admitting when he's, flopped or made a mistake or something went wrong. But I will say that I felt, I never worry about his reactionary nature. I know this is like a source of great anxiety for a lot of conservatives. A lot of conservatives are like, oh God, I'm so worried that he's, they're going to get under his skin and he's going to get triggered and then he's going to start, speaking out and, and I never worry about that. I mean, I don't really feel like there's been a lot of evidence in the past to suggest that he has a problem with this. What I worry about is the consistency of his energy, because there are times when he's shown up for debates and he's been on point. He's been a firecracker. He's, had amazing energy, great message. He's on point. And then I've seen him at other debates where he seems sleepy and low energy and he's not really bringing it in the way that I want him to. And so for me, it was like, okay, look, you're not up against Joe Biden anymore. It's not you versus a walking corpse. You now have this opponent who's considerably younger. There's all this manufactured energy behind her and how exciting she is in her campaign is like, you need to bring it. And I felt like he did. I was very happy with his energy, his messaging. I thought he was focused. I thought he was sharp. I've seen a lot of people on the right say, she really, she triggered him and got under his skin. I didn't see that at all. I thought it was the opposite. I felt like she was emotional through the entire thing. I thought she was reactionary. I thought she came across as insecure at times, lost at times, angry and defensive at times. She seemed very triggered to me through the entire thing. And the majority of what she had to say was extremely superficial, lacked any kind of depth or substance. Whereas I felt like he went in very deep on issues and talked about the ways in which things were much better 5 years ago under his leadership and how we can get back to that place again. She would deflect often to Charlottesville and January 6th and the Central Park Five and, all of these different things. And then she would do this. She would reference things from 5 years ago to 40 plus years ago. And then after she did, she would say, we're ready to move on. We're ready to turn the page. It's like, well, then why are you talking about things from 1984 right now? But look, I thought that he clearly won the debate. Could it have been better? Probably. But I thought he did a great job. And for me, he was the clear winner.
What did you think about the moderators?
I share everybody's frustration and everybody's reaction to the fact that they were completely inappropriate. They were one-sided and biased and only fact-checking him, not fact-checking her, interrupting him, injecting their own opinions, which was outrageous and completely inappropriate. But I'll also say, I mean, what did we expect? I don't know. I feel like people are, but it's the same people on the right who are saying that she won the debate and that he did a lousy job. Those same people are freaking out about, the ABC moderators. And I'm like, you know what? When I compare that debate to when he did the CNN town hall, and I can't remember now if he's done Well, yeah, he did. I think he did one with her name is Abby, whatever, the CNN anchor, the black woman, and then with the oh God, what is her name? The other one that people say look like Dylan
Collins?
Mulvaney.
Is her
Can't
name
think of her name.
Collins right now?
Caitlin Collins.
Caitlin Collins, that's it.
When he did those, I mean, they were interrupt. Like he couldn't get three words out. And they kept cutting him off and saying, "Mr. President, that's not true. Mr. President, that's a lie. Mr. President, that's already been debunked. Mr. President, that's so." I mean, to me, this seemed like kind of nothing compared to other things he's gone through. So I don't know. I think people got it in their heads that he didn't do a good enough job, and that perhaps she won the debate, and now they're overreacting to everything. ABC behaved exactly the way I would expect ABC to behave, and I honestly didn't even feel like it was the worst thing I've seen the left do in their treatment of Trump.
Think that a lot of people also thought, because he had the debate with Biden, that they thought it was going to be very, very similar to that. But I think at that point, I think Obama and others, they were trying to get rid of Biden, as we can see. And I think they pretty much set him up in that debate and didn't give him, the questions, didn't, coach him, didn't do anything so he would fail. I think this time they coached Kamala, I guess, for a couple days in a hotel room. And you could tell that a lot of her answers were scripted. A lot of her, she must have known the questions because nobody, I've seen her debate before with, especially when she was running for the presidency with Tulsi Gabbard, and she cannot debate. So it, to me, it looks like a lot of the answers were scripted. She knew a lot of the questions. She knew what to do. And also her facial expressions, the way she turned and smirked, and she was playing a part.
Yeah, I think so. I don't, I've heard a lot of people say, she must have gotten the questions in advance. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. To me, it's like I felt like all of the questions for the most part were pretty obvious that's what we're going to talk about. I mean, it was, border, immigration, economy, it was crime, of course, January 6th, we've got to talk about January 6th. So to me, there were no real curveball. Oh, Israel, Ukraine. There were no real curveballs. I mean, I think that her handlers would not have been doing their jobs if they didn't sit down and coach her on the issues that were ultimately, it's not like there was something like, oh God, didn't see that coming. And I felt like her answers were, yeah, I think they were rehearsed, but they were also, again, very superficial. So I don't know. I'm frustrated in a way that conservatives are so caught off guard by this, because I'm like, first of all, she didn't do that great of a job. So like, let's all calm down. I mean, like she didn't come out like Winston Churchill and like everyone's like, oh my God, what a statesman. Oh my God, she's like she was just adequate. She gave some very basic responses to very obvious questions. And I think that the problem is that once again, conservatives just expected her to go out and just be like, and just like cackle and not know what. And like, obviously, they're going to sit her down and coach her and practice and practice and practice until they're confident that she can go out there and say something that sounds like it makes sense. And I think that's what happened.
We need to get a lot more people to see the truth. And you have this giveaway going on, and you're giving away $10,000. And I think what you say for the first 100 people, you're going to be giving them a
50 people
50,
get
$100.
$100.
That's right. Why did you start this?
Well, okay, so what you're describing is right now we're doing what we're calling the walkaway $10,000 testimonial video challenge. And so the reason why we're doing it is because from 2018 through to the end of 2020, Walkaway started as a Facebook group. We grew to over 500,000 people. Tens of thousands of people shared their video testimonials and their stories about why they're walking away from the Democratic Party. And then in January of 2021, on the same day that big tech banned President Trump from Twitter and Facebook and everything, they also deleted the Walkaway campaign from Facebook. So they deleted our entire community, all of our videos, all of our content. And so we've been starting over. We started a new Facebook group. We actually created our own app called Walkaway Social. And so we just wanted to do something that was kind of like fun and competitive and kind of exciting to get people sharing their stories again, to get people excited about making walkaway videos again and joining the community. And the other thing too is that social media landscape has changed so much over the last couple of years. So many people are now on TikTok. People have migrated over to X after Elon Musk because they feel like there's more opportunity for free speech and to be, you know, more transparent about their views. And so, you know, we don't have necessarily like the same concentration of people on Facebook anymore as we used to. So what we felt like was that we could do something kind of like fun and get people engaged in this thing together. So we've launched this contest where we're giving away $10,000 to the best walkaway video that people submit between now and October 15th. And it's all people have to do is go to our website, walkawaychallenge.com. This is the contest website, walkawaychallenge.com. They fill out our submission form, which takes 30 seconds. And then we're asking people to make their walkaway video and upload it to our app, Walkaway Social, upload it to our Facebook group, Walkaway Campaign, and then upload it on the X platform and use our hashtags Walkaway and Walkaway Challenge. If people do that, they're entered into the contest. The first 50 people to do it automatically win $100 just for entering. And then we're at the around November 1st, we're doing the prize giveaways. Third place gets $500. Second place gets $1,000. And the grand prize of first place gets $10,000 for the best walkaway story. So there's still plenty of time to enter, but I recommend that people do it now, because if you're one of the first 50, you'll get $100 just for entering. And all you have to do is go to walkawaychallenge.com, sign up, make your video, upload it to those three platforms. And when you post, use hashtag walkaway and hashtag walkaway challenge.
Great. Hey, that's I'm going to put all the links at the bottom of the video. Are there any other sites that people can visit to see your work?
Yeah, our main website is walkawaycampaign.com. And if people go to walkawaycampaign.com, there's a link to be redirected if they want to enter the contest. But on our website, you can see kind of a full rounded experience of a lot of what Walkaway does. So, you know, we're not just a social media movement of people sharing stories and walking away. We do college campus tours. We go into minority communities and do town halls. We do live debates. We do educational videos. We do, you know, I think we're the hardest working team in the business, especially considering that we're a tiny little team, you know, trying to pull off miracles every day. But we work really hard and we do a lot. And, you know, it would mean the world to me and mean the world to our team if people would take the, you know, 5 minutes, check out our website, look at what we do. And if you want to get involved, and I highly encourage people to, they can sign up for our texting list. They can sign up for our email list, you know, all sorts of things. You can do all of it at our website. And that's walkawaycampaign.com. Please check it out.
Great. I'm going to be putting all the links at the bottom of the video to make it a lot easier for people to go over. Brandon, thank you very much for coming on the X22 Report Spotlight. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Always great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.